Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I almost missed the lead-in there. I was gagging over a comment that I had made, which was that Ben Affleck is the idiot of the week for this past week for his moronic arguments in favor of Islam. They weren't actually arguments. They were unfounded opinions, and he took over for the Abominator. And I wrote, who knows who'll win next week, and DB text that probably the CDC guy who said that quarantining Liberia would only make Ebola worse. It's amazing.
He's in the mix. He's in the mix.
Wow, boy. He is really he is in the running. That you got a disease that for which there is no cure, and that the only proper approach is quarantine. And he says, oh, that would really make it terrible. You'd make it worse if you were to quarantine the country that is the most stricken with...
Makes sense with to me.
Oh, wow.
But then again, I've gone full retard over here.
This
is amazing.
Goodness.
This is amazing.
You know, there are times...
Moronic.
Yeah, there are times when you've got to say, you know, Satan may have been right. God did create idiots.
Yeah, speaking of Satan, I want to bring one thing up. You know, we share openly that that his name is really, it's written out once, Halal Ben Shakar.
Right.
And I believe it's Halal as opposed to Halal as you see it.
Yeah. The question is that in the great Isaiah scroll, it's spelled one way the first time and another way the second time. So it's either Halal or Hillel Ben Shakar.
I'm quite sure it's Halal, and I'll tell you why I think that. Mm-hmm. It's because you have Halal Yah, meaning radiate Yahweh's light.
Right.
And you know, that speaks of a shiny object, Halal, and his name means the rising morning sun, you know, the arrogant sun of the rising morning sun. So I'm quite sure it's Halal.
Yeah, I'm actually think it's Halal too, and for a number of reasons.
For what reason? Do you...
For those who have witnessed Satan, like Yosha explained Satan's fall from heaven. He explained Satan as a bright flashing light. When Paul met with him on the road to Damascus, while we normally wouldn't trust Paul's testimony, he did describe him as a bright flashing light. Paul, who admitted that he was demon-possessed, claimed that Satan was a messenger of light. All spiritual beings are essentially energy-based. They are light. And you are correct that what HaSatan wants is to be considered greater than Yahweh. And so Halal, which has two connotations, one is to radiate light, and the other is to be arrogant, is a perfect fit. Yeah, I would agree with you. I have no argument with that at all. And there is the other issue that when HaSatan, under the guise of Allah, came up with the idea that food that would be nourishing in Islam would be called halal.
That's the final nail in the coffin, isn't it? And by the way, you know, you point out that you know, Allah wasn't the first false deity to be worshipped under the crescent moon. The first one was in Babylon. His name was Sin.
Right. Right. Yeah, he went by many names. Sin was one. Bel was one. Baal. Murdoch. All convey the idea of the Lord. And you are right that one of the names was actually Sin. All true. Hello, JB. How are you?
I'm good.
Good, thank you.
And, you know, I got to put a contender in for idiots of the week, and that'd be all those people condemning Israel for building houses in their capital.
Yeah, that would be the Abominator. It would be Francois Holliday and his foreign minister, and also the prime minister of the UK were the first to the first three to openly condemn Israel for building homes. You know, we disassociate the Islamic State from Islam, and they're menacing the world. And yet we condemn Israel for building houses in their capital city.
That's an actual
amazing
war,
isn't
you know.
Yeah. You know, maybe we should follow their advice and build houses in Washington, D.C. instead of shrines or office buildings for lobbyists.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I go back to this because I don't see how you can fund Daesh and bomb Daesh all at the same time, ISIS. How do you do it? I don't get it.
Today the world gone mad. Right, was to fund, support, and arm the moderate rebels in Syria who would attack both Assad and the Islamic State. Now, do you think that if you were a moderate in Syria, that you would be anything other than an ardent supporter of Assad? And if you were a Syrian and you were a moderate, you're as good as dead if Assad fails.
That's right.
And if you were a moderate...
And you're dead if you're a Christian, and you're dead if you're anything else. That's why these are all points you're going to have to ask these guys that run the show, you and I mean, that's like a rhetorical question, isn't it? It's insane.
The whole world's gone mad. It is a world that has lost its ever-loving mind. I would want to quickly review the Ain verses, since it's been a while since we've been here. Ain is one of the most insightful letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It's one of the five vowels. It is drawn in the form of an I. It is interesting in the I for Ain that it's not the Osiris I. You know, if you look at the Osiris I, the Egyptian eye that's, you know, always watching, the eyeball, the pupil, is right in the iris is right in the center of the eye. That's not how it's drawn in Hebrew. In Hebrew, the retina, the pupil of the eye, is at the very top of the eyeball, which means it is looking up.
Up.
Absolutely. In the Osiris eye, it's looking, you know, level, so it's looking at other men and men's institutions. But the Ain in Hebrew is focused up, the same direction that the Hay, the two peoples in Yahweh's name, are reaching, is up. It's just a subtle thing, but probably worth mentioning.
Yeah, definitely looking up. I'm looking at it as we speak, and no, those eyes don't look the same.
It's looking up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, things are looking up the minute you begin to look up. The Ain verses brought to us by Yahweh's inspiration through Dode in the 119th Psalm read as the following. I'm not going to cover all of them, but I'm going to kind of run through them quickly because I just think it's a nice transition to the Pay verses, and it's a good reminder of where we've been. I have genuinely acted on behalf of the means to achieve justice and to resolve disputes and have been vindicated. We spend a lot of time on this particular statement, because this statement affirms that the thought process that, and research and etymological study that I've tried to go through every time that I'm confronted with a word that is obviously important to understand, found a logical conclusion, resulted in a logical conclusion. It became obvious to me in studying misvot that the misvot are the means to resolve disputes. The misvot would therefore be Yahweh's seven invitations to meet. And this particular statement affirms that because he says that he acted on the misvot, which means he answered the invitations to meet with Yahweh, and he was vindicated. You know, when Yahweh says, walk to me and become perfect, he's saying the same thing. He only has one path. He only has one means of vindication. Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim. I mean, the first three is the process of vindication, and the fourth is the process of empowerment. And so he said, I acted upon, on behalf of, and upon the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, Asha, Mishpat, and I was vindicated, Tzedak. Tzedak means to be forgiven, to be vindicated, to be declared innocent. And the most wonderful thing about Tzedak, beyond the fact that it speaks of being vindicated, Tzedak is also the Hebrew word for upright, to stand upright. And it is also the Hebrew word for to be right. And it is also the Hebrew word for to be righteous. So to be right in Hebrew is to be righteous. To be righteous is to be upright. To be vindicated is to be standing straight up. I mean, it's a great word. It's a great word that visually describes God's view of things. You know? So, Mishpat leads to Tzedak. We went into this whole analysis of the second time through the 119th Psalm for the express purpose of trying to determine whether or not God was asking us to do something. We're like in the sense of he was laying out rules and we were supposed to do what he said. And so Asa was the word that led us, that's the verb that led us back into this second review. And here we have an Asa sighting. The first two, if you recall, were actually Yahweh was the one that was doing the acting. But in this particular case, it's Dod. And it says, I have genuinely acted on behalf of, I have engaged in the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which means he attended Pesach and Matzah. And I have been vindicated. It works the same for us. You promised to personally pay the price to meet the eternal needs of your servant. Well, I spoke that in the future tense, or even the present. The reality is that from our perspective, it's past tense. From Dod's perspective, it was future tense. Now, there are no tenses in Hebrew, but it's still important to have a perspective. Dod was writing this 1,000 years before Yahweh enabled those promises. So they were promises that Dod recognized. He realized that the mishpat, the means that Yahweh was going to use to resolve the disputes, particularly Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, were promises that Yahweh had made to pay the price, to meet the eternal needs of those who engage with him. We now can look back and recognize that Yahweh has done as he promised. But they were future events from Dod's perspective. They are past events from our perspective. On behalf of and according to all that is good, moral, generous, favorable, beneficial, agreeable, and healing, Tob. The conversation we had today in the second hour and third hour of Shattering Myth was the idea that Yahweh is really likable. What he says makes sense. It's beneficial. It's favorable. It's general. It's generous to us. When you meet him and listen to what he has to say in his Torah, it's very easy to agree with him and with what he's offering. He's likable. He's approachable. And maybe it's oversimplifying to say he's a nice guy. I mean, he's just a great guy. And that's what this is basically saying, is that Yah's means to resolve our disputes is really generous. It's extraordinarily beneficial. And it's flat out good. I don't know how it... How, if we were given all the time in the world and all of the neurons in our brains firing at the same time, how anyone could come up with a better plan in terms of for the beneficiaries. But it was also the ideal plan for Yah himself. And this is something that I've only really come to embrace recently, and I may be on a limb here. So I'm open to constructive criticism here. I used to think, you know, what a hellish price Yahweh had to pay to remain just and resolve us of our sins. And how grateful we ought to be for God having made that horrific a sacrifice on our behalf. And, you know, it was a hellish sacrifice. No question about that. But, you know, when I look at my relationship with my own sons, I have never looked at anything that I've done that has sacrificed on behalf of them as a sacrifice. It was never painful. In fact, it was some of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. And so I've begun to just have a slightly different perspective on Yahweh's fulfillment of Pesach and Matzah. Well, he endured a great deal. It's what he chose. It's what he wanted to do. He feels good about it. It was the right thing to do. It was a fatherly thing to do. Dads enjoy doing things that benefit their sons and daughters. So that's an extreme view. That Yahweh, while he paid a hellacious price for Pesach and Matzah, chose to do it, and now looks back at what he did as, I did the right thing there. That was good. And I think that's the hint here. That when it's saying right here, you're promising, and now he has done, to personally pay the price to meet the eternal needs of your servant on behalf of and according to all that is good, moral, generous, favorable, beneficial, agreeable, and healing. It was agreeable even to God. It was favorable even to God. I'm a decent father. Yeah, I was a perfect father. Now, there are things that I did as a father and didn't do as a father that, looking back, I regret. Yahweh has no regrets. He's the perfect father. He chose to do this. I am quite certain that if you were to ask him, what are the proudest moments in his existence? My guess is that amongst the proudest moments in his existence is what he did to enable our vindication. So you guys are being pretty quiet. I know that's an extreme stretch in terms of a view of Yahweh, but I'm not asking you to concur. And if you disagree completely, you're more than welcome to express your position.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, that's he wants us to take note of that. I would want people to take note of that if I did that for them. And
right.
That's called leading from the front. It says something about who he is. He's not like
right.
a typical leader today that goes out and say starts a war and then sends hundreds of thousands of other people to fight that war.
Well, if you're the creator God of the universe,
the guy that's right up front.
Let's say you're the creator God of the universe. The whole thing is yours. You could do away with it in a blink of an eye. You could change any aspect of it in a whim. And you've got some people who are really stinky. They're miserable. They're bad-mouthing you. But you made a promise to Abraham. Wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed. But you made some promises to him, and you're going to keep the promises to him. And so you meet with a stutterer named Moshe, and he doesn't even want to go with you back to Egypt. But yet he acquiesces, and you physically go to Egypt to meet with the most arrogant prick in all of the world, Pharaoh. And you've got to deal with him. And then you've got to deal with his subjects. And then you've got to constantly hammer at him. Now, do you think that is the normal behavior of God? I mean, God could have just said, zap, the Egyptians are all gone, come on, you're out of here. But yet, yeah, he led from the front. He was willing to go in and do the dirty work. He was willing to engage on behalf of his people and be right there with them, yank them out of the mud. Now, it's not the kind of thing that you normally think of God doing. He didn't have to do it that way, but he chose to. He doesn't take shortcuts. He engages right alongside. And
it's pretty much the opposite of the people that we have leading the planet today.
Yeah, exactly the opposite. Yeah, exactly. Was Eisenhower, was he on one of those landing craft on D-Day?
No. No.
No. Was he on the beach of D-Day in the first hour? 2 hours?
No,
hours?
Neither was Patton, and neither was any of the rest of them.
No, Patton was playing with balloons over there someplace in northern England across from Calais. But, you know, balloons, tanks and balloons.
Yeah, his face,
artillery.
His fake army. Yep.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and Eisenhower was planning all this from a long way away. No, they're entirely different. Yawa and human leaders. So, anyway, something to think about. I'm not trying to sell you on the idea, but I think that Yawa views what he did as good, and that he looks at it the same way that we as parents look at it when we do something that requires a sacrifice on behalf of our children. He says, my focus, perspective, and perceptions, my aim, have decided, and they yearn for your salvation, for you, the Savior, to deliver me, and for your promised word of righteous vindication. The promised word of righteous vindication is Yahweh with us, Yahweh saving us, Yahusha, which is exactly what we just read. The verb there is Yahusha. I want you to act and engage on behalf of, dealing with, your associate in accordance with your mercy and with your steadfast love, Chesed, because I have chosen to yearn, I have elected to be influenced by, and I have properly responded to your inscribed prescriptions of what I should do in life to be cut into the relationship. Everybody wants to be saved. But Doe didn't say, I want to be saved. He says, yes, I yearn for your salvation, but what he said is, I want you to act and engage on behalf of your associate in accordance with your mercy and your steadfast love. So it wasn't Dode's love for Yahweh that says, listen, I love you so much, you need to save me. He says, you are so merciful that I want you to engage according to that mercy. And for what reason? Because I have a good heart? No. Because I've done some good deeds? No. Because I went and slew Goliath? No. Why? Because I've written some pretty songs?
Because he's actively engaged and done what he needed to do in his part of the relationship.
Yeah, because I've chosen to learn, which is, I think, the single most important thing in the relationship from our perspective. Because all of eternity is going to be learning from Yahweh. And so he says, because I have chosen to learn and to be influenced by, to properly respond to, Lamad, your choke, those inscribed prescriptions that cut us into the relationship. Please teach me to think clearly and rationally. I want you to help me be receptive to learning, discerning, and perceptive so that I can comprehend what I've been taught, because I really want to know and understand your restoring testimony and your enduring witness. The most important prayer, if we're going to, I don't know how many of you pray with any regularity. I don't. I have conversations with Yahweh. My preference is to listen to him because I recognize he knows what I'm going to say before I say it. And what I have to say isn't a gazillionth as important as what he has to say. So I do more listening than I do talking. But when I do talk, to him. This is my favorite prayer. If I were to say, what do you say the most? It's what Doe just said here. Please teach me. And I want you to teach me to think clearly, rationally. I want you to help me be receptive to your learning. I want to be discerning and perceptive so that I comprehend what you're teaching me. Because I really want to know and understand your enduring witness, your restoring testimony. I think when you start there, everything else falls into place. I just think that is the single best place we can start. Anybody want to challenge that or augment it? What do you guys think?
Well, I think that's perfect.
I'm not going to argue.
I think that's exactly right. I don't pray as in any sort of fashion that we were ever taught to pray. Not once. The only thing I've ever asked for is more knowledge.
That's what
and,
it is. Better understanding.
And that's all I can ever. Yeah, and understanding is a better word. You're right. And because you can have all the knowledge in the world, and if you don't understand what you have, it won't matter. But
this, by the way, has
both,
Larry. This has both. It has BN, which is understanding. Understanding is by making connections. It's something you do a lot. You know, when you're citing Jan's testimony about a particular subject, you're making a connection between what he said in one place and what he said in another place and how it relates together. Understanding is simply making connections between those things that you know. And so he has BN here. And he also has yada. And yada means to know in a relational sense. So he is talking about yada and BN, the Ida. And the Ida is Yahweh's enduring witness, his restoring testimony.
Well, again, you need both. You know,
you need both.
And again, you know, when we sit down and we're seeking knowledge, and the more knowledge you have, of course, the more you realize you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lisa had put up a post the other day that talked about the first letter and every word when he was talking about the formation of the universe and the first two passages of Bereshith.
Mm-hmm.
They actually represent every particle in the universe. I'm going, wow. You know, somebody had figured that out. You know, and you're sitting there and you're thinking about knowing the Torah, you know, understanding the Torah and the knowledge in the Torah. You know, you just think about that one little thing, and then how many 5,000 other things are we not seeing? You know,
is this from the periodic table that you're talking about? These letters,
yes,
are from the periodic table, comprise the principal elements in the universe. Is that the analysis here?
Yeah, that's what it showed. I mean, now I have not sat down and broken down every one of them to know that, but that was the research on it. And
To shoot that to yada at yadayah.com, I would love to see that. I'm not surprised. I know a great example of just a subtle thing related to the periodic table is that we are a carbon-based life form. You know what the atomic number of carbon is? What day were we created?
Six.
What is the number of man?
Six, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, six.
Yeah, and there's also in the RNA strands, DNA strands, constant and protein. The most common repetitive number in that alphabet is 22. Yeah, how many letters there are in the Hebrew alphabet?
It's 22.
Yeah, 22.
Yeah. It's just like the almonds on the. On the menorah, you know, and you divide that out, and you've got infinity is what you've got because you've got pi. You know, if you take the candles into that, but I'm just saying it's everywhere. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know,
so if I were to
take this.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, it's just the lead up going into the
you know, where they did the sacrifice. It's 4,000 cubits. You know, so it's the end of the fourth century when the sacrifice is made. You know, or the fourth millennia, excuse me.
Yeah,
it's just everything in there is just.
Yeah.
You start looking at it, and oh, what a coincidence! What another coincidence! What an amazing coincidence! And there's just too many of them.
I am quite sure that if we were to go through and do, and we will have this opportunity to be shown all of the insights that we.
Oh, here we go! I've got the table and everything.
Yeah, we could spend a thousand years going through the all of the clues that Yahweh gave us to his Torah. That provide insights as to who he is and what he's offering and what we can expect going forward. Anyway, this last statement has three powerful words connected, bien, yada, and ida, knowledge, understanding, and Yahweh's testimony. Then he says, it's time to act on behalf of and according to Yahweh, and he's speaking now of those who broke and totally violated disassociating themselves from and seeking to nullify the terms of frustrating the purpose of the teaching of your Torah. And God is going to act. I mean, it's now past time that he should act against those who have frustrated and annulled the purpose of the Torah. That's why I tell folks that I really want to be at Paul's trial. I want to be at Muhammad's trial. And I would love to hold those idiots accountable for trying to nullify and frustrate the purpose of the Torah. And so we've got Dode, who among all men who has ever lived is the single greatest human advocate of the Torah. He's a bigger advocate of the Torah than the man who scribed the Torah, Moshe. And he is his enemies. Those that he once held accountable are those who tried to nullify it, those who tried to frustrate his purpose. I would agree with him. Therefore, God, I genuinely and totally love the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement, your mitzvah, because that's the synthesis of the Torah. Therefore, God, I completely concur with all of your precepts, those instructions which you have entrusted to us, encouraging us to carefully examine them for guidance so that we can respond appropriately to you, the Pakuda. Every deceptive and misleading way, mistaken belief, and false communication, which becomes a popular way of life, I completely abhor. I am genuinely and openly hostile to them, fighting this adversary. You know, there are lots of people who view God as tolerant. But he's not. Dode has made it really clear here that he just loves the Torah and everything that Yahweh was offering in the Torah and wants to understand and know the Torah and every word to its fullest extent. And then he goes right off and says, and those who would frustrate its purpose, those who advocate deceptions and misleading ways and provide false communication, those who are popular, says, I abhor them. And that's the kind of thing that pleases Yahweh. How do we know that that pleases Yahweh? Who's Yahweh?
Because
Dode loves more than anyone.
Yahweh. And that was his take on it, too.
Right.
You know, if you were in bed with my enemies and you said, you know, you were running around with them, you were having dinners with them, you were having a good time with them, they were my hated enemies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you come out, Larry, I've been out with blah, blah, and blah, blah. I'd be thinking, what are you doing around me?
Right. You know, I had run a lot of businesses in my time, and I've always owned the businesses that I ran, which means that they were begun with my personal money. I mean, I wrote the investment checks to get them started. I made payroll out of my pocket, and I worked sometimes as much as 80 and 90 hours a week to keep them in float. Took lots of risks to to have ideas be manifest in life, to then come alive. And with every business I've ever owned, I've had those that I was writing monthly checks to that were feeding their family based upon this business, that would go and party with, cavort with, be best friends with, direct competitors. Never very comfortable with that. I know that it's not comparable to what we're talking about here with Yahwa and Doe's statement regarding those that mislead or are opposed to the Torah, because that's life and death. My thing was just business. But I was really uncomfortable with it. And to the degree that I was uncomfortable with it on a business that I created time and time again, I have an appreciation for what Yahwa must think when he provided so much for us, gave us such a marvelous offer, is so himself likable, and his offer is so generous, and his testimony is so magnificent regarding it, that when people deceive and corrupt it and annul it and kick it around and spit on it, I think not only is he hostile to them, I think he's really pleased when we're hostile to those people. I think he wants us to be in.
Yeah, well, he even says when he's talking about Sheol as an example, why don't you stand up and oppose him, basically. You know, and so he's told us to openly oppose those people. He's told us to.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And that's what we do.
Now, you do it on a regular basis. I think you do it as well as anybody I've ever encountered. You're extraordinarily like Dode in that regard. I mean, I suffer poorly. I just don't get to meet many of them anymore. I don't get to encounter many of them these days.
Right. Yeah, you're not in that kind of forum. But, you know, sadly, you get a lot of people that... they come to know the truth, and then they want to handhold people that go, well, you know, what's the difference? Jesus, Yeshua, Yahusha, whatever. And then right there, they're done. I'm done with them. Didn't you hear me?
I had a good friend that I did a lot of things with, and we went on, we learned a lot of things together. And ultimately, when I kept on going where the words led, and he didn't want to go there, he accused me of creating a religion out of words.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. Other than just to shake your head and say, you know, you can't respond to it. But you just shake your head and say, you know, it's just so incredibly sad.
Well, I've been in a couple small debates with that friend of yours, and he's pretty hopeless at this point. He's a pretty hopeless guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He can't let go of that religion.
No, can't let go of Christianity or of Paul, and it's a shame. I don't think it's ever going to happen at this point, guy.
One of them asked me, "Boy, that sure shows your love." And I said, "It does. It shows my love of the truth, and it shows your total disdain or care for the truth."
Yeah.
I said, "Do I love you?" No.
That is the point that Dode is making in Psalm 119. 27 and 28. That is exactly the point he is making. Dode says, I love the truth. Therefore, I'm opposed to those who mislead.
That's right. And you should be. And
you should be.
Especially with people that have
a family,
lot of knowledge.
Right.
You know.
Okay, we're in a family. The family is the covenant. Let's compare it to an earthly family. Let's say that we're the McCoys. And the Hatfields are armed to the gills, and they are hell-bent to kill every one of us. Now, if you had a son or a daughter as a Hatfield that went over and said, you know, I really love everybody, and I'm going to go over with the McCoys. I'm going to tell them where the back door is to the house. I'm going to kind of give them some insights as to, because I know what they want to do. I'm trying to please them. I really love these McCoys, and I want to give them access to my family. What would you think of that individual?
I'd call him a traitor.
Right. Exactly. And when you're part of the covenant family, you ought to show hostility towards, be intolerant of, show no love whatsoever for those who...
And that is pretty much the opposite of what we've been taught.
Of course.
Because, you know, there's an entire religion out there based on political correctness. I mean, almost all of Christianity now is politically correct.
Right. Which means that it is wholly incorrect.
Yeah. Can't we disagree and still get along?
Yeah.
You know, then you should be on the floor of the House of the U.S. Senate.
Right.
That's what you should be. And there's no place in the covenant for you. You're the worst, really. Because that's beguiling. You know, let's hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and you believe what you believe, and I'll believe what I believe, and we'll all be wrong together, but we'll love each other. And after all, isn't God really just love? I mean, you know, that's how it breaks down.
Yeah. No. You know, when it's like
exactly.
The guy that's campaigning for nincompoop of the week for the CDC and saying that quarantining Liberia will only make it worse. No. No.
Excuse me while I fall out of my chair over here.
No. You have a
Where
deadly
they
disease,
these guys?
Quarantine it. Those things which are harmful, you ought to be opposed to. When you advocate on behalf of a terrorist, murderous, ruthless doctrine like Islam, as the President of the United States is doing, you're counterproductive. We ought not tolerate that. We ought not embrace it. We ought to be opposed to it. You know, that's when you're not willing to stand up for the truth and against the lie, you no longer have any merit, you know, and standing up for the truth means standing up against the lie.
Well, I had to sit down for the truth a couple days ago.
Pardon?
I had to sit down for the truth a couple of days ago at a band recital with my grandkids when they all said, hey, let's rise to the Pledge of Allegiance and do the whatever song. And me and my wife just sat there. And I stood there and just
flat
out, yeah, you know, he tells us I'm not going to violate his standard. If you all want to, that's up to you.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. But I'm not going to. Yeah, I agree with you. I know before we
well,
go.
Well, I'd have been sitting down with you. I probably would have left the room right there.
Yeah, me too.
I trust you. I think he's got my back.
Yeah.
I know he's got my back because I know him.
I trust him. I think that any time you your perspective and approach is consistent with his, you're doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
Before we move on, I know Will had a comment that he wanted to make. Go ahead, Will.
I'm trying to remember. I'm getting old. I think I'm getting Alzheimer's.
Okay. All right, then what we're going to do is we're going to jump right into the pay versus, and if it comes to mind, then feel free. Pay, in the Hebrew, happens to be the Hebrew word for mouth. It's drawn with a open mouth, not a closed mouth. So what pay is encouraging is that is speaking, responding, answering, providing testimony. Is what you would do with an open mouth. With an open mouth, you're communicating, providing testimony. So we should not be surprised that the pay verses begin with, your restoring testimony and enduring witness, your edut, are extraordinary and astounding, pele. And you might wonder why with the P or pay verses we would begin with edut. We actually don't. You know, in English, we write things so that the subject, you begin with the subject and then it's modified by the adverb or adjective. But in Hebrew, the adverb or adjective precedes these things. So it actually would be pale edut. You know, your wonderful, marvelous, amazing, and miraculous restoring testimony and enduring witness. So therefore, my soul observes them and is saved by them. Natsar is a unique Hebrew word, and that it is equal parts observation and salvation. You can translate natsar, saved. You can translate Natsar, observed. And to completely convey both sides of it, it communicates the idea that if you are observant, if you're paying attention, you can protect those you love, and included in that is your own soul. So it's how being observant leads to the benefit of salvation, is Natsar, one of my favorite Hebrew words. It was written, by the way, in the Call Perfect, indicating that this is the salvation and the observation were both genuine, and that the benefit was complete and total. It says here, the unfurled and unfolding revelation, this is a pay word, petach, the open doorway of and the disclosure of your words, debar, is a continually illuminating or a continuous source of light, a brilliant, this was in the Hifl Imperfect, resource which makes a rational evaluation of the evidence leading to understanding, bien, pithé, simple, for the open-minded. Now, we, as a group,
that's a pretty pithy quote.
Yeah, that's pretty
You know, one of the things I'd want to point out there, and I mean this because I see it over and over and over again, mm-hmm. is Dode talks about being sensible and rational.
Yes, he does.
You know, the whole time. And see, that's the one thing religion isn't.
Right.
Because in religion, you've got an omnipresent God. You know, he's there at the football game, and if you lose, even if you lose, there was a lesson to be learned. God is trying to teach you something, and on and on.
Yeah.
So what's that?
And both teams are bowing down in the locker rooms praying to their Lord for victory.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Well, I mean, yeah, you've got both teams doing the same thing, but the whole point is that there's rationality involved in all this. And, you know, once you come to understand that Adam wasn't the first man, and that 6 days is really 15 billion years our time, and on, we could go through the whole litany of things. We find out it is very rational, everything Yah was saying. Whereas in the religious realm, you know, take it on faith that Adam was the first Homo sapien.
Yeah,
there was nothing before him.
Yeah, which is stupid.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would ask you if you had complete understanding, what would be the benefit of faith? What would faith augment?
There would be none.
If you had total understanding.
There'd be none.
If you absolutely know, why would you ever believe? What would be the benefit of believing if you know?
Yeah, I believe I'm married to Yalda type of thing. Well, no, I know I am.
Yeah. It's the belief and faith are what is required for those who neither know or understand.
Well, I have faith. I can get on top of my roof and jump off, and gravity won't work.
Yeah, you
I'm sorry,
can
I'm
believe,
being sarcastic.
You're right. You can believe that if you jump off your roof, that you will fly. But to do so, you're lacking both knowledge and understanding.
That's right.
And if you have knowledge and understanding, you would never believe that you could jump off your roof and not be hurt. You know, it's like the prayer in the locker rooms of the football game, where even those who are not praying for victory are praying that no one gets hurt. Well, if you don't want to get hurt playing football, let me give you a clue, Sherlock.
Don't play. It's the battering ram of your body.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game. If you enjoy the game, that's fine, but you're taking a risk in that game. Just don't play. So, if there is anything that, if I were to prioritize what I like most about the 119th Psalm, is what, Larry, you just emphasized. And that is that the 119th Psalm is focused entirely on what can be known, what can be understood. What should you focus on, think about, so that you come to know it and understand it and therefore respond to what you've come to know and understand in a rational way? The whole celebration of the Torah in this psalm is a natural consequence of recognizing that the Torah is teaching. And so if you recognize the Torah is teaching, your goal will be to know what was taught and understand it. And the entire book, from beginning to end, is based entirely on that concept. And so it is what I like most about it.
Well, that's why I wanted to point it out, because it's over and over and over again. It's
right.
He speaks of rational thinking and rational thought. And this is always in opposition to religion. There's nothing rational about religion, as we all have come to know.
When I was a Christian, I remember how uncomfortable I was with the notion of faith, and how Christians all try to convince one another that their belief is absolute. The whole concept of belief being absolute and total is a crock. And I was always wondering, well, how would one have stronger beliefs than somebody else? And doesn't the Muslim suicide bomber have greater faith than does any Christian?
I've said this 100 times. If it was faith that did it,
right,
he's ahead of you, pal.
Right. If faith is what matters, the Muslim suicide bomber believing that if they go kill somebody that they get multiple virgins in heaven, faith in the moronic, their faith is much greater than any Christian's. And so I began to question, I said, what is this notion of faith? And I became more and more and more uncomfortable with it. And the more I came to know, the more uncomfortable I became with faith, all the way to the point where I finally just dropped the whole thing. And while I didn't want to admit it, I was an agnostic.
Faith is actually taken from the Roman goddess of loyalty, and the
right.
base word that faith is taken on is Fides.
Fides, right.
And, yeah, that's the Roman goddess of loyalty.
Yeah.
And, we're right back to pagan belief systems that are not rational.
Now, compared to that, the thing that was one of the most rewarding aspects of the Torah for me, and writing Yada Yah for me, is that by writing Yada Yah, because it focused on Yah's prophetic testimony, I recognized that he gave us the information necessary to know for certain that he exists and who he is and what he's offering. And for the first time in my life, I realized that just logic, rational thought, an analysis of the evidence leads to the absolute confidence that Yahweh is God and that he created the universe and that he has authored his Torah. And when the evidence was so overwhelming in writing Yada Yah for that, that was a moment where I could go from faith to knowing. And it was one of the most relaxing experiences in the world. People say, well, what do you believe? I don't have any beliefs. Well, what do you put your faith in? I don't have any faith. I know. I'm not bragging about this. It's not like I'm special. It's not like I've had a personal revelation or a personal insight. I just took the information that God gave us seriously, and when I evaluated it logically, I came to know him. And the comfort level of being able to say, I know, in fact, I would say for everyone listening to this and everyone listening to the archive, that when you made the transition in studying the Torah, that you went from wanting to know who God is and what he's offering to knowing him personally, that had to be one of the most satisfying moments of your life. I think it is for all of us. And You know, one of the things about knowing, too, is I'm never trying to convince somebody that I know. I don't care if you believe me or not.
It's a relaxed. It's a relaxed situation. If you're trying to do anything out of faith, you know, I always looked at the statement where Yosh is saying that, you know, there's this narrow door and few are going to enter it. And that was one of the things that really held me back from buying into the whole system, because I thought, what am I supposed to do? Out faith the next guy?
When I was a Christian, I was trying to sell what I believed because it reinforced my beliefs when other people accepted it. Now, think about that, but that's what Christian evangelists are doing. They're trying to convince you that what they believe is true, because if they convince you, then it reassures their faith. And when you come to know, then you're totally relaxed in the whole presentation. If somebody wants to know what you know, you'll make it available to them. If they disagree, you don't care. If somebody...
No,
if,
I don't care. I don't care. That's the whole point.
Right.
Once I show it to them, nobody
disagrees.
Yeah, if they don't like it, if they don't like Yahweh's words, let's say that, you know, they want to run in total opposition.
Right.
Hey, that's what free will is all about.
Yeah, man. Have
go
at
away.
It. That's yeah, fine. Go away. I just don't want to have anything to do with you. In fact, it's a demonstration of love to say, I don't want anything to do with you. Just go away. But it's a comfort level that comes from knowing that is... It changed everything for me. I mean, I went from studying to try to come to know who Yahweh was, to come to understand what he was saying, and, you know, you're kind of always at edge. And then the moment you realize what he has provided more than enough to know, you just sit back and relax. And from that moment on, everything is benefit. Very comfortable. That's one of the ways I think that Yahweh becomes so likable. It was nice of him to do that.
Well, yeah. But you know, as we sit here and we discuss things, you know, pagan belief systems that are inclusive of things like faith, they almost become laughable to us now, because it seems to me that it's a pretty uptight existence. It really is. You know, to run around and have so much faith. Faith in what? Oh, I have faith. I have faith. They have entire movies made on this subject, you know.
Yeah.
And when it gets right down to it, it doesn't make a damn. It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's worthless. Faith is a worthless notion.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big difference between Abraham coming to know and trust Yahweh and walk out of Babylon because he knew him, and faith. That's a great point you've made in the past. It's a point I've made with people hundreds of times now.
Yeah,
and I put it just like that.
Yeah, Pauline Christianity is its fulcrum is that Abraham had faith, and because Abraham had faith before the Torah was written, that the Torah had nothing to do with Abraham's salvation, that his salvation was therefore through faith. That's Paul's argument. Now, the problem with that argument is twofold. Well, maybe it's threefold. First, Abraham didn't have any faith. There is no point in time where Abraham expresses faith. Abraham knew Yahweh. He knew Yahweh as well as I know Yahweh. He knew Yahweh as well as I know my wife. He knew Yahweh. He ate and drank and partied with Yahweh. He knew him. He didn't believe him. He wasn't.
Sure.
In fact, if anything, he didn't believe Yahweh. His counselor was questioning him. But he knew him. There's no faith involved. Second, Yahweh says that he shared his Torah with Abraham. So Abraham did have his access to the teaching. Third is that apart from the Torah, Abraham's not even known. So if you were to make an argument using Abraham to negate the Torah, when Abraham is only known to us because of the Torah, You can't negate the Torah using a personage that is only known to us through the Torah.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
So, I mean, those are the three arguments.
I'll throw in a fourth one.
Okay.
I'll throw in a fourth one here for you.
But,
the living Torah was with Yahweh
at the
point of before Abraham existed.
Yeah, of course. But Yahweh actually says that he shared his Torah. In the Torah, Yahweh says that he shared his Torah with Abraham. So Abraham had access to his teaching. This statement that we have just read, it says, your restoring testimony and your enduring witness are exceedingly and are extraordinary and astounding. So therefore, my soul observes them and is saved by them. So how is his soul saved? By Yahweh's enduring witness. What was Doe's perception of Yahweh's restoring testimony? It was extraordinary, miraculous, amazing. The unfurled and unfolding revelation, the open doorway of your word, is a continually illuminating resource which makes a rational evaluation of the evidence leading to understanding, bien. So this is debar or bien, or if you want to go right to the beginning, pitak, debar, or bien. The open doorway, the unfolding revelation of your word is a continuously illuminating source of light, a resource which makes a rational evaluation of the evidence leading to understanding, simple for the open-minded. There was no time in all of the writing of Yada Yah and Introduction to God and even Questioning Paul. I can even say, and speaking of the adversary HaSatan, there was no point in writing Prophet of Doom that I felt like what I had done to achieve some illumination on Yahweh's testimony was difficult. I never once said, wow, Craig, you are just really a smart dude. That was really clever of you to have figured that out. Never once. I mean, it never even dawned on me. My perspective is exactly Doe's, that every bit of this is easy. Every bit of this is simple. Every bit of this is straightforward. You do not have to be the sharpest tool in the shed to understand what Yahweh is communicating. You just have to want to know. You have to be willing to spend the time. The insights are all there. They're not complicated. They're not hidden. They're all there. While it takes an investment of passion and energy and time, for sure, all things that Yahweh gives us back in spades. I mean, it's effort and he gives us back unlimited energy. It's time and he gives us back unlimited time. So it's not like we're sacrificing anything here. But that's all we give. This is not difficult. You know, for example, understanding that the Ruach Kodesh is our spiritual mother. That's a pretty important insight. It's not hard to figure out. It's just all over the place.
No, it's very important insight. Otherwise, you get stuck with some really lousy translations.
Of course.
So, yeah, you have to know
that. The fact that Yahweh's name is pronounced Yahweh because he teaches us how to pronounce it and introduces us to us in the Torah. And the Torah, it tells you how to pronounce the Wah and the He, which are the only letters in Yahweh's name that anybody would ever even scratch their head and say, oh, I wonder how to pronounce that. No one questions how to pronounce the Yod. And you just look at Torah. Do you have to be a rocket scientist to figure it out? Of course not.
No, but you have to give it some thought. Yeah, you have to give it some thought.
When Yahweh tells you a thousand times
to
over
do is...
that those who disregard what he's offering, they will cease to exist. And at that point, do you have to recognize that there has to be a fate for human souls that's other than eternal torment? Do you have to be smart? Or you just have to be an open mind and say, well, I've been told this now 100 times. Gee, Maybe he's telling me the truth here. I don't think
anyone. Yeah, well, you know, because so many people have to shake the idea of hell. I mean,
I know.
You know, I mean, let's face it, every religion's got to be scary. They got to have
there's money in hell, man. There's money, and promising people you can keep them from hell. And what money would be if you say, if I point you in the right direction, all I'm doing here is keeping you from ceasing to exist. I mean, really hard to sell a religion under that basis. So the point I wanted to make is that every insight that Dode came up with and is sharing with us, every insight that that we're talking about here, all of them are easy to understand if you're open-minded and you're willing to do what Dode did. See, Dode didn't say just that understanding was easy for the open-minded, because that's not a complete thought. What he began with is, your restoring testimony, your extraordinary witness is something that I observe. And he's just gone through and talked about how much he loves it. If you love it, if you're passionate about it, if that's your perspective on his testimony, that they're marvelous, extraordinary, wonderful, miraculous, and you focus on it, then, and if you see it as a source of continuous illumination, then understanding is easy. It's really, how do you approach it? If you don't like the Torah, if you think the Torah has been annulled and you prefer the Pauline New Testament, then I'm going to tell you, you're going to have a real tough time understanding the Torah. If you approach the Torah as, Creator of the universe established this document for the express purpose of us coming to know him and understanding what he's offering so that we can engage in a family relationship with him. If you approach the Torah from that point of view, it's not hard to understand. All right, we've pretty pithy statement here, though. You're unfurling and unfolding revelation of your word. The open doorway of your word is a continuously illuminating resource, which makes a rational evaluation of the evidence leading to understanding simple for the open-minded. As quotes go, that's a really good one. By the way, I like the fact that that continually illuminating was written in the imperfect. Without light, can we read? Ever tried to read something in a dark room? No. You need light to be able to read.
You'd better have a bare minimum candle, and then you're going to hurt your eyes. But
absolutely.
You know, there's something else here. You know, we talk about astounding things. It's astounding that words written 3,500 years ago are seriously studied by even a few people today.
Right.
It is astounding, especially when they're not being paid for it. You know, I mean, there's no instant monetary gratification.
No.
You know, this is just a kind of time-intensive thing.
Occupation. You know, we could read 3,500-year-old words, 3,000-year-old words. Dode was 1,000 BCE, so 3,000-year-old words. We could read 3,000-year-old words. And in the hieroglyphs from Egypt. And all you're going to read is about how one pharaoh wanted to impress us that he was really macho. And then we would read how a bunch of pagan gods had if you mummified yourself and killed all of your family and all of your servants and took lots of food and had your brains pulled out through your nose and your internal organs put in jars, that you could float off into the afterlife. Now, there is no way you're going to study that and learn anything. You could learn what they believed, but what good was that? They were wrong. You can study Roman history, and one of the first things you learn about Roman history is they were revisionists. They were not only appalling and miserable and disgusting, but their own history of their own undertakings was hugely revisionist. And All you can learn is what they believe. You won't even learn what they did. And so it is extraordinary that there's one and only one document that dates to 3,000, or in the case of the Torah, 3,500 years old, that you can read and be blown away with insights and understanding today. That you can learn more about how creation occurred and life was conceived by reading a 3,500-year-old explanation of it than you can reading a textbook. That's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Look, I had a guy disagree with things like fast flying war machines,
right,
with drivers in them in a war,
right,
you know,
right,
that's 19 years in our future, written,
right,
in 520 BCE. He,
right,
disagreed with me on the grounds this stuff was written thousands of years ago. So in other words, prophecy that is made for this specific time, according to the Yovel count,
right,
in this generation, and he's describing pretty clearly the machines that are used in war.
Of course.
It didn't count because it was written so long ago. I didn't get that. I thought, and this,
wow,
guy was a lawyer.
Wow.
I said, wow. I said, he was a judge. I said, I would never want to be in your courtroom. That's what I told him. I said,
so
you
what Muhammad said and did to create Islam in the Quran and Hadith don't count because they're 1,400 years ago. What Obama said about Islam, which is wholly inconsistent with the religion's nature and behavior, that does count because it's more recent.
No, yeah. Based on this guy's, yeah, sure.
Wow.
That's right.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, then good luck with that. The last statement that we've read from this song to the Torah reminds us of the 19th Psalm, which reads, Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. Yahweh's enduring testimony and restoring witness is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple for the open-minded. Very similar concept. Now, waxing a bit poetic, our beloved songwriter now sings, I have opened my mouth, and pe is mouth, and pa'ar is to open. And he just talked about Yah's restoring and the testimony and enduring witness being an open door. So he says, I have opened my mouth, and I have panted in pursuit because I genuinely long for and desire the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement, your mitzvah. I have panted in pursuit, and that's pretty flowery language, which means I have thirsted in eager anticipation. This is the call imperfect, genuine, on an ongoing basis, and the walk consecutive paragogic is an expression of free will. So Toad is saying here, listen, you know, it's one thing for me to say that what you have communicated and the offer that you've made on the terms and conditions of the covenant, I know them, I understand them, I accept them. And he said all those things. But he's going beyond that now. What he's saying is, I thirst for them. I am running towards them to the point where I'm panting. This is something that I care deeply about. And that's what he's communicating here. So he says, I have opened my mouth, and I am panting in pursuit, because I genuinely long for and desire your mitzvah, the terms and conditions of the covenant. We did an entire program based on, and I've forgotten who it was, and I apologize for not remembering who it was. I think it was JB, but I'm not positive. Could have been someone else. And their statement was, you know, we keep on presenting the terms and conditions of the covenant as if the terms and conditions of the covenant are things that we have to do to participate in the covenant, as if you know, we're somehow giving something up to accept these terms. And this individual said, you know, every one of the terms and conditions of the covenant is a benefit to us. I mean, forget about for a minute the five benefits of the covenant, which are pretty marvelous. Perfection, eternal life, adoption into Yah's family, enrichment and empowerment. Okay, those are the five benefits. They're pretty spectacular. The point this individual made, and I completely concur, and I think it's what Dode is saying here, is that the actual conditions for our participation in the covenant, things that we need to embrace, every one of them is beneficial to us. We gain enormously when we walk away from religion and politics. We're liberated. I mean, our perspective all of a sudden becomes vastly superior. Our thrill, just the joy of living. I mean, everything. It's like you took all the crud. It's like you're driving in a car in a mudstorm through a swamp, and you can't see anything out of the window. And then all of a sudden, this rain comes down, and you hit asphalt, and you get out of the swamp, and the windshield is completely cleansed. That's what walking away from religion and politics is all about. It's like being in a swamp with a bunch of pigs, in a pigsty full of rubbish, and you walk out of it, and all of a sudden you're completely washed clean with a fire hose. You know, all the muck is gone. It's a benefit. Trusting and relying on Yahweh. You know, just being comfortable that we can trust Him. We can rely on what He's done. That's a benefit. That's not a lot. It's not something that we're sacrificing. Walking to Him, becoming perfect. We walk to Him through seven steps, all of which are parties. They're celebrations. You know, we're celebrating the seventh right now. That's a benefit. That we get to go to a party that He paid for. That has the Creator God of the universe as the host. This idea of observing the mitzvah. Well, the more I observe the mitzvah, the more I grow, the more I'm enriched. And even circumcision has health benefits. It has all sorts of benefits associated with it. Everything that Yahweh has listed in the terms and conditions of His covenant are to our advantage, even before you get to the benefits of the covenant. And I have a hunch that's what Dode is saying here, that I have opened my mouth and I have panted in pursuit because I genuinely long for and desire the terms and conditions of Your covenant agreement. He's saying beyond accepting them, I love them. I'm passionate about them. I care about them. I'm not just telling you, God, that I'm accepting these. I'm trying to convey this with all of the passion, all of the genuine longing and desire that I can muster. It's my perspective. I suspect it's the perspective of everyone participating in this program this evening. Please turn to me and prepare me to actually face God. And please be genuinely merciful to me in accordance with the means used to achieve justice and resolve disputes, the mitzvot, on behalf of a person who genuinely and truly loves Your name. Wow. You know, when we engage in the mitzvot, and we celebrate Pesach and Matzah, and we celebrate Kippurim and Sukkah, where we're walking into the presence of our spiritual mother, the feminine manifestation of Yah's line. We are prepared to face God. I would not want to meet God naked. I tell you, I would not want to do it. There's too much crud in my life. There's just too many things that I'm not proud of. I'm ashamed of. And if God could see those things in me, rather than celebrating being in His company, I'd be so embarrassed I'd want to go run and hide. But if I'm covered, in his light, so that all he can see is the beauty and the passion of my soul and my desire to be with him. Huh. Man, I can run with open arms. I've got nothing to hide. That's what Dode is saying. Prepare me. How does God prepare us? Through the mitzvot. The mitzvot prepare us to enter his presence. Those seven steps that we take to camp out with him prepare us to spend time with him, to be in his presence. And for those who say, you know, it doesn't matter what we call God, you ain't got as many names. When I talk to Jesus, he knows who I'm talking about. And, you know, you're making this whole religion over names. And Dode said, I want you to respond to me this way, because I love your name. I love your name. And to love his name is not only to know his name, it's to understand his name. I love his name, too, because I understand his name. I can fall in love with somebody that's bigger than I am, more capable than I am, that's reaching down and out to me with an open hand like a loving father. I can fall in love with someone whose name conveys that. I can fall in love with someone who's much more powerful and influential than I am, who is encouraging me to stand upright, to reach up, to walk with him. And that's what his name conveys. I can be really comfortable and fall in love with someone who's got the tent peg that says, I'm going to make you secure. And I know that that tent peg represents wa, which means to increase, to add to. I can be really comfortable and in love with that name. And just think of the idea of all of this. The creator of the universe gave us his name, told us his name, encouraged us to rely and use his name, rely upon and use his name. That's a pretty neat honor, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
how many people
yes,
do you think, if you were living in Roman Catholic medieval Europe, and the king's name was George, and you were a lowly peasant, do you think that George would allow you to walk up and say, "How's it hanging, George?"
I don't think he'd allow you to walk up to him, speak to him. You'd have to kneel down to him like the peasant that you were.
And call him your majesty. Bow down and call him your majesty. You absolutely could not say, "Hey, George." But, you know, I can say, "Hey, Yahweh. Hey, Yahweh. How's it going?" You know, what an honor to be able to call God by his name, to know him by his name, to love his name. And there is I would say that if I were to list the animosity that I get towards yada yada and introduction to God, and even questioning Paul, I'd say that that more of it is focused on you think you're special because you have your own special pronunciation of the name that no one knows how to pronounce. You know, Big Whoop. Big Whoop. And you, of course, you say, so you're telling me that the four letters, which is actually three of the 22 letters, all vowels in the Hebrew language, which are used to pronounce every Hebrew word, that they're not pronounceable in any Hebrew word? Or they're just not pronounceable when they're put in this Hebrew word? Are you telling me that Yahweh gave us his name 7,000 times because he doesn't want us to know it?
And he told us to proclaim it and, you know, speak his name and call out his name, even though we can't speak it or call it out.
When he has a,
you know, he wants
third
us to sit there and try the impossible.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, to go even further, James, in the third statement that he etched in stone, he said the negation of his name, the belittling of his name, making his name for naught, which would be saying you can't say his name, for example. is an unforgivable.
Yeah, like the Showa system.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Showa system. He uses it right in there.
He does. I don't. Yeah, it's because it's NASA show. Yeah, it's. And
there's
they
not a lot of God says
show.
Unforgivable, but that's one of them.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are other unforgivable things that you can do, but that.
There ain't a lot of them, though.
No, there's not a lot of them. That's how important his name is. Now, one of the common traits of everyone who is part of the covenant family is we love his name. It's just, I've never met yet someone who embraced the covenant, who embraced the Torah, who said, you know, I'm just really not comfortable with the name yet. I'm going to use G-D. I'm going to stick with Hashem. Now, once you've come to view the Torah as teaching, as guidance, as opposed to law, and once you've come to know that Yahweh is Dad, and that the covenant is a family relationship, at that point, somewhere along that line, you come to fall in love with Yahweh. And you might say, all right, you know, I'm not positive that it's pronounced Yahweh. It might be Yahuwah, you know. I'm comfortable with you. That's all fine. But at that point, you're no longer hung up on this notion that it's unpronounceable or that you shouldn't say it. Please prepare and position the conduct of my life toward your word, because I do not ever want any form of idolatry or iniquity to lord over me. And if Torah means guidance, and Dode obviously figured it out, wouldn't, if you're receiving Yahweh's guidance, wouldn't it position you to conduct your life in a way that was consistent with his word, with his promises, and therefore away from the various things that are harmful?
Yeah, like religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he's using the concept of lord over in association with iniquity and idolatry, and the Lord's religious ways. So he doesn't say to Yahweh, please lord over me. He never once asks Yahweh to lord over him. But he's saying, please prepare and position me through your word so that no form of iniquity, of idolatry, ever lords over me. Because that's what the Lord does. I mean, he's into idolatry. He's into iniquity. Yahweh's not. And Yahweh doesn't lord, but Satan does. Kind of an interesting twist here that provides the proper understanding of why Yahweh never refers to himself as the Lord. And
yes, but he does make several statements about people calling him Lord, and none of them are good.
No, none of them are good. My personal favorite is the one where he tells us that upon his return, the thing that he is happiest about is he will never have to hear the title Lord spoken ever again. Now, if when you return, and that's the first thing you say, that's the thing that's going to make you the happiest, is I never have to hear that title Lord spoken and associated with me ever again. That tells you how much he hates it. And I think he hates it because it's the antithesis of who he is and what he's offering.
Well, it's just designed to change his nature. It's designed to attach him to religious mythologies and attach his name to a religious platform or his reputation. They don't like his name much. I know
you bow down before lords. You worship lords. Lords control. Lords lay down the law. Lords own. There are no freedoms, no rights in the presence of lords. And fathers uplift. Fathers enrich. Fathers liberate. Fathers guide. Fathers are lovable. Fathers you walk beside. The concept of father and the concept of Lord are exact opposites.
Well, it's sort of like Torah and law.
Exactly. They're exact opposites. Yeah, they're exact opposites. They're the...
Isn't that interesting, the way everything just happens to get twisted to be an exact opposite?
Right. Yeah, Yahweh is replaced with Lord when it's the exact opposite of who he is. Torah
right.
is replaced
and,
with
and
law
that goes,
when it's the exact opposite.
And it goes right into bowing down, you know, in servitude, into submission. I've got a note that puts together some, I don't know, half a dozen times where Yahweh says, and I will genuinely bend down for you and bless you. I will help you.
Yeah,
Barak. Some clown tried to turn that into Yahweh's kneeling in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that is correct. Yahweh is. He is. Just like my father when I was a young boy, knelt down to lift me up. Just as I knelt down before my sons to lift them up, the Creator God of the universe knelt down before Larry to lift him up. And he was happy.
Yeah, in that way, yes. In that way, yes. But he was trying to make it sound like some worship.
No,
he
told us he did, and he absolutely did. That is what makes him so lovable, is the Creator of the universe, God, knelt down before me to lift me up because he loved
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's right. That's
the
right.
First letter in his name. The answer to the question is absolutely yes. But you're missing the point of kneeling down. He didn't kneel down to worship me. That would be stupid. It just says it would be stupid for me to kneel down and worship him.
Well, but that's how he was. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But that's how
he knelt down as
said,
loving
look.
Father to lift me up. Because the only way he could lift me up was to get down to lift me up. That's
he has to come down to my level, which is not real high. So
how can he love
is.
Me? How can he come to know me? How can he lift me up if he doesn't come down to my level? What do you think Yahusha is if it's not God coming down to our level to lift us up?
I'm right there with you, Yada. I'm with you. You know, it's just funny the way the religious try to turn it around and make you look like some
but
guy
the, but the answer
to
the question is absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
As a loving father, the Creator God of the universe, Yahweh, got down on his knees before me to lift me up. And then we both strode through forever together, walking through the universe that he created together, arm in arm, hand in hand, side by side, eye to eye. And that's exactly what he said he would do. It's exactly what he has done. That's what makes him so lovable. How could you not like a God willing to do that?
Well, you're into the Creator of the universe who made Adam for the purposes of relationship and accompaniment or companionship, as opposed to a religious deity.
Yahweh told us that he Barak before Adam, that he got down on his knees to bless him out of love to lift him up, that he was just kidding. I mean, why would he say that?
No, I believe he literally did, and he breathed Nesama into his nostrils. I absolutely believe that, and that's what he said he did. And I've come to understand he means what he says.
Yes,
and
exactly,
he does
what he says. He talks the talk, he walks the walk.
And it's very literal.
It's reliable. Yeah,
I did a note the other day called "What If."
Mm-hmm.
I just want to read this. It says, what if it turned out atheists were correct and that not one religious belief system was accurate?
Uh-huh.
Well, if that were the case, then these atheists would be in lockstep with exactly what the Creator of the universe says in his words.
Right.
What if there was no religious deity that is real? Well, again, the atheist would be in total agreement with Yahweh.
Right.
And I've got in parentheses the Creator of all existence as we know it.
Right.
What if atheists and all who advance the notion of religion in any way were both wrong? Well, according to Yahweh, that is the case.
Yeah.
Yahweh never once supports religion in his words. He does, however, condemn clerics and anyone that uses his reputation to advance a religious platform. Perhaps both sides should step back, scrutinize Yahweh's words in extant form. What you will find out is that almost all religious material makes a mockery of his words. As an example, he never said Adam was the first man, only the first man with Nesama. Never says the flood was worldwide, but regional. Talks about relativity, which literally proves our universe was created in 6 days from his perspective at the point of inception. And then I've got in parentheses, that's 15 billion years our time. Right. What if what they call the Ten Commandments were in fact not commandments at all? What if the notion that Yahweh loves everybody and is omnipresent were yet more religious traditions as worthless as garbage? Sadly, religious tradition and highly copy-edited religious books have worked in conjunction to make a mockery of Yahweh's words. Little wonder to me there are so many atheists. I think religion created them. That's the note.
Wow. And wow, what a great concluding line.
Can you send that to me?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I'm sure.
I would love to have a copy of that.
I want to. When I was reading that, Larry, I was thinking about something. And JB, you're pretty adept at these kind of things. I want to make a statement, and I'm not positive it's accurate, but I think it is. Does Yahweh ever once condemn atheists? He's constantly condemning the religious and the political and the military.
I think he does once. I think he does once. It seems I've read that in one way.
You know, maybe one of the listeners here can point me in a direction where Yahweh condemns those that deny that he exists. Because as you read through the Torah, as you read through the prophets, he's constantly condemning his mankind for worshiping false gods, for duplicitousness, for leading people astray. I don't know where he specifically goes out of his way to condemn the atheist. I mean, he's not going to reward the atheist. If you're an atheist, you don't know him, you deny him.
It seems when he was going over things that were despicable to him, that was one of them somewhere.
What's that now?
But it seems... I was reading some things that he found despicable,
right?
Like incest, as an example. There was like a list of things, and I think one of them was people that that are atheists. I think.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
the only one I found in a quick search is Psalm 14. It says, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no Yahweh."
Okay.
That's the only one I've seen that comes up from a quick search.
Right, and that's not. If the fool has said in his heart there is no God, then that would be a condemnation of an atheist.
Of atheism.
But to say that the fool has said in his heart that there is no Yahweh, all that is doing is, every time that I talked to, communicated with a Muslim and said, Allah is not God, he's modeled after Satan. God's one and only name is Yahweh, and they'll say there is no Yahweh. And they weren't atheists. So most atheists are more open to use Yahweh's name in their review of the Torah than are religious people. So I don't think
Psalm 53, and that actually does say the fool has said in his heart there is no God.
Okay. So he's saying there that it's foolish to say there is no
fool.
God. Okay,
which is true
is being called, by the way, is being called a fool, is that a condemnation or is that just an assessment?
That's an assessment. You're right. He does not condemn the atheists in the same way that he attacks the religious clerics.
Yeah, the religious clerics, he is condemning.
Religion.
I mean, he's not just saying they're foolish.
Oh, absolutely.
He is absolutely condemning them. So there is a difference there. I mean, I'm not trying to exonerate atheists here. Your what if was beautifully written, and it just caused me to think that you were comparing opposite points of view here, and God really despises the religious and has very little to say about the atheist.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Part of the reason for that, Larry, is the religious created the atheist. If there hadn't been religion,
I don't think
there would be an atheist.
I know for a fact in the case of my dad, it was absolutely true.
Yeah. I know for a fact that every atheist that I have ever encountered is an atheist because of the stupidity of religion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They get to a point where they cannot, they can't separate Yahweh from religion. That's all it is.
Yeah, what I find is that when you're encountering an atheist, they justify their position almost exclusively by exposing the lies associated with religion. In other words, it's the religious lies that cause them to be and justify their atheism. So
right.
That's exactly right.
I mean, when I hear them, they bring up every stupid religious tradition there is. By the way, James, I put both of those things on your wife's page.
Okay. All right.
James
just sent me a note, and he said his phone cut out. He can't call back in, and I think the show is over, and we're still recording, the show is over, and that he cut out. But let him know by way of email if you could. But thank you, Larry. Thank you for concluding with that lovely what if. That is profound. I think that you're right, that religion has created the atheists, and that atheists are right about everything except the existence of God. And the religious are wrong about everything. Because they're not even right about the existence of God, because the God they think exists doesn't.
Right. I mean, if you've got the omnipresent God where people have to run around in submission.
Right. The tolerant God, the all-loving God, the all-knowing God.
Oh, yeah.
He's
all-loving while he sends you to
every
hell.
Every minutia of your life, the God of you,
yeah.
God. You're right. Yes. If the God of the caste system, those gods don't exist. They're figments of people's imaginations, and so... They
were put in their imagination for a reason by men who wanted power. And how is it that people can't understand that men who wanted power lied? What's new about that?
Yeah, in fact, I have modern evidence for your judge that power
companies
lied.
I also have old evidence.
Yeah. In fact, all evidence is consistent with that. All right. Well, we'll hold the contest for nincompoop of the week, but I do think that the CDC guy is in the lead.
Oh, he was in the mix.
All right. Well, Larry, good news is the exercise program and the diet is holding steady. You know, I'm continuing to shed pounds and continue to gain muscle. So I'm still doing.
Congratulations.
The only thing that's different is that I was occasionally, several days a week, I would exercise for 2 to 3 hours. And I had a really rough day last Sunday after 3 hours of exercise, 2 days in a row. And I came to the conclusion this is probably not a good idea. And now I do 1 hour. I do 1 hour of either stair climber or half an hour of either stair climber or stationary bike, and I do an hour of upper body and my Bowflex. So
there you go.
An hour is what I do. I don't do more. I might add, you know, a brisk walk on the beach for a half an hour, but I'm not pushing it because what I found is that when you're only eating 1,000 calories a day and you do 2 hours or 3 hours of exercise and only consume 1,000 calories a day, you're not increasing your weight loss. Your body is just absolutely going ballistic as to what am I supposed to do to power this muscle, this guy's constantly exercising when I'm getting nothing. and you know,
yeah,
it's too much.
You always remember you got that free meal after you eat or after you work out. You know,
yeah.
I baby myself. I mean, I'm going to have some crepes at that
when I reach my target weight, I think I'll have a splurge. I had one splurge thus far, and it didn't go well. It was I ate one quarter of a pizza that had some grilled chicken on it, thin crust, almost no cheese, a lot of tomato paste. And I thought that and a half a beer at one of my favorite pubs would be a nice treat when I hit one of my threshold numbers, and it just didn't go well.
Well, you get to a point where your body doesn't accept it as much.
Yeah,
so go eat a steak instead.
Yeah, steak would have been a better choice. Yeah, steak would have been a much better choice. But mostly, you know, if I'm going to grill meat, I have tonight a rotisserie chicken, I'll pull the skin away, and I love the taste of freshly cooked rotisserie chicken, and you know, that and some salad will be dinner. And you know, I add,
well, you're eating right,
you know,
you're,
I
just
drink
gonna
fruit
continue
juice.
It's
all very low fat kinds of things. You still get plenty even in things like non-fat cottage cheese or non-fat milk, and there's still fat. So you're still getting enough fat for the body to function.
Well, you just got to remember, there are good fats out there. There are very good fats, like in avocados. Like
avocado,
when,
I love avocado. I chop up avocado and put it in my salad. Yep.
Well, see, that works.
Yep.
That's very good.
The only thing I'm having trouble with
is
just to find the coconut oil, because a tablespoon of coconut oil is like 150 calories.
Yeah, and what it's going to do is cause you to burn more fat, and you want like 2 tablespoons of that a day. It's going to jump start your
But that's 300 calories. That's a third of my entire daily intake of calories.
Yeah, I know. Don't, you know what? If you want to feel, don't count it.
Don't count it. Yeah.
I'm telling you, don't count it.
Okay.
Because it's just going to cause you to burn more fat.
Okay.
It's going to increase your metabolism. Some of the leanest people I know use that. It's an absolute trick. It speeds your metabolism up. If somebody was on medication, as an example, and they took that, they'd find they need far less of whatever medication they're on.
Yeah. Really? Now, I am using a variety of the diet related pills, just the over the counter stuff that speed up your metabolism, and they're mostly from a variety of different herbs, and so.
Yeah, well, this will kill your. It'll increase your thyroid. It'll jumpstart your thyroid gland. That's really what that's for. And I'm telling you, it will cause your metabolism to shoot through the roof, because that's really what your thyroid gland does.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
It takes care of a lot of
metabolic activity. Forget about the calories, because 300 calories, that's a third of my daily intake.
Just don't count it. Don't count it. You watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, good.
All right. Well,
it's been a pleasure. I always enjoy starting my Shabbat this way.
Well, yeah, it's fun. I agree with you. Yep. Let us reason together.
Too.
All right. Yeah, it was fun today. Good night.
Good night.